Hello, it's Wednesday, June 23rd, and this is the Tantrum Hour Report. You're tuned in to CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick. The CHMA studio is located in the traditional lands of the Mi'kmaq people, unceded in the treaties of peace and friendship first signed with settlers in 1725. I'm Meg Cunningham. Here's what's coming up today. Nova Scotia is excluding New Brunswick from its Atlantic bubble at the last minute, since New Brunswick is opening its borders to all vaccinated Canadians. Fundraising is still underway for the Kavana Wakalele Memorial Bursary at Mount Allison. There is just one new case of COVID-19 in New Brunswick. Canada is entering the final week of participation. And we hear some voices of people who participated in the protest blockade along the Trans-Canada Highway yesterday evening. New Brunswick will no longer be included in Nova Scotia's Atlantic bubble. Nova Scotia Premier Ian Rankin pulled the plug on the relaxed border restrictions with a matter of hours to go before the bubble reopens, and announced that New Brunswickers will have to undergo modified isolation once they arrive. Premier Rankin cited New Brunswick's decision to allow vaccinated Canadians from outside of the Atlantic into the province as the reason behind the change.
Effective tomorrow at 8 a.m., anyone from PEI or Newfoundland and Labrador can come into Nova Scotia without isolating or completing the safe check-in form online. But because New Brunswick opened up to the rest of the country, we are placing a modified restriction on anyone traveling in and out of that province, and Dr. Strang will provide more details on that requirement. We understand that restrictions are difficult, especially for those that have strong connections to New Brunswick, that have family and friends.
Rankin said that he did not alert New Brunswick Premier Blaine Higgs of this change before he announced it yesterday.
I tried to get a hold of the New Brunswick officials last week. We were hoping to learn more. Myself and other premiers in Atlantic, we were supposed to have a call last week, and that never happened. But we had to modify our isolation requirements based on their decision to open up to the rest of Canada.
This is not the first time the two premiers have clashed. Just last Friday, Rankin said that Higgs never mentioned New Brunswick's plan to reopen to the rest of vaccinated Canada, while Higgs insisted that he did.
We were looking at the plans since last week when we just found out about their plan to open to the rest of the country, and we've had many discussions, Dr. Strang and I, over the last number of days, and we learned more about their restrictions at their border or lack thereof, but we think that this is the right place to be, and the decision was made today.
New Brunswick's Path to Green plan was originally published on May 27th, 2021, which estimated the province would allow vaccinated Canadian travelers in the province on July 1st. The decision was met with outrage from Cumberland MLA Elizabeth Smith McCrossan, who demanded that Premier Rankin undo the decision or she would organize a blockade on the Trans-Canada Highway starting at 4 p.m. yesterday.
And at the 11th hour, Premier Rankin, in some vendetta or some battle he is having with our neighboring premier, has reneged and has put in new modifications for the Atlantic bubble, which will once again prevent the families living here in Nova Scotia, close to New Brunswick, prevent them from seeing their families once again.
CHMA's Erica Butler visited the blockade as it got going, and you'll hear voices of those protesters at the end of today's show. Nova Scotia's isolation requirements for New Brunswickers are now more strict than Prince Edward Island's. The isolation requirements depend on when the person was vaccinated and with how many doses. All doses must have been received at least 2 weeks before making the drive to Nova Scotia, and multiple tests are often required, which cannot be rapid tests. New Brunswickers who receive two doses of vaccine still need to self-isolate. They will be released from self-isolation once they receive a negative test. People with just one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine have to isolate for at least 7 days, possibly more, and will be released after 2 negative tests spread out over the course of the week. Anyone who hasn't been vaccinated at all must isolate for the full 14 days and undergo testing at the start and the end of their isolation. Anyone who enters Nova Scotia within 14 days of their first dose will be considered as unvaccinated. Meanwhile, as of June 27th, Prince Edward Island will not mandate isolation for fully vaccinated Atlantic Canadians, regardless of the reason for travel. Non-vaccinated or partially vaccinated New Brunswickers will isolate on the island for 8 days and be released after a negative test. There have been no developments concerning the currently inactive Vitalité Clinic at the Civic Centre, but Premier Blaine Higgs told CHMA that he was looking into it. Thankfully, the corner drugstore and Jean Coutu Pharmacy are both still available to provide people with either their first or second shot. The corner drugstore has requested that all appointments be made online rather than over the phone. All New Brunswickers who received their first dose are now eligible to book their second dose. Your second dose needs to be at least 28 days after your first dose, and mixing and matching vaccines is also an option, even if you got the AstraZeneca shot for your first dose. If you still have not received your first dose, it's not too late. You can still book your first dose at a regional health authority clinic or at a pharmacy. This is the final week of the National Participation Challenge, which means there is just 1 week left to rack up some more points for Sackville. As of today, Sackville is 12th place in Canada and 2nd place in New Brunswick, just after Heartland. Sackville's Summer Program Coordinator, Carson Refuse, says organizations can help push Sackville across the finish line by keeping track of their active minutes. He thinks that this is where Sackville is falling behind. Refuse says that as long as Sackville is in the top 4 of New Brunswick, it will be a finalist and will get to submit an application to be named Canada's most active community. Points can be logged using the Participation app. Tivana Wakalele made an impression on many people, including many members of Mount Allison University. During her time there, from 2015 to 2019, Tivana was an active participant on campus and made several strong bonds with students and staff. After her sudden and tragic death early this year, Kavana's friend Kit Nicholson and staff of Mount Allison banded together to make a bursary in her name. One of those staff members was Associate Professor Dave Thomas, who remembers Kavana fondly from his political science course.
I didn't know her super well, but I first met her. She was in my first year politics class, the Foundations of Politics class, Polls 1001. Mm-hmm. And so this would have been about 5 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. She was in my first year class, and that's when I first met her. And, you know, we chatted a number of times after class and whatnot about the course itself. But then just developed a friendship after that class was done. And then I knew her for the rest of her time. She was never in any of my other classes, but I knew her for the rest of the time that she was at Mount Allison, and would say hello and chat every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. What was she like for someone who's never met her before?
Yeah, so Kavana was a really interesting person. Mm-hmm. And it was really right from the first conversation I had with her after class one day, I really liked her. And I really sort of was drawn to her in many ways, right? Because she was this. So first of all, for someone like me who studies international politics and you know, my field work was done in South Africa, and I teach a course on African politics. So first of all, here's this African woman from Kenya and who spent a lot of time in Mozambique here in Sackville, which is really interesting to begin with for me. But more importantly, this really smart and savvy and energetic young person who had a really good and astute analysis of the world around her and the world around us in a way that is I think very rare amongst students. So an astute ability to assess and analyze what's going on in globally and locally, and make sense of it very quickly in a really good way. So that was what she was like. But the most important thing, I think, and that about her that I was really impressed with and that left such a lasting impression on me was how courageous she was. And like kind of courageous and not at all afraid to take a stand and not at all afraid to speak her mind. Mm-hmm. And that was really awesome, you know. And if you go back to the first time I met her, after class, after one of the first classes at the start of the semester, she came to talk to me. And in a way, she was confronting me. In a way, she had a problem with the way that I had talked about something in the lecture, something to do with, I think I had mentioned the African continent or countries in Africa or something. And she was basically calling me out on the way that I mean, I won't go into the details, but calling me out on the way that I talked about this. Mm-hmm. And this was right away for me. I'm not a person who gets defensive and upset when something like that happens. I was really impressed. And I was like, wow, okay. You just came up to a professor that you don't even know, right? Who has like power over your grades and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like just, and was, had no fear and no problem. In a polite way, but in a rigorous way, challenging the way that they had said something or done something in class. And that's what I always liked about her. And that's just one example, but her entire time here was like that. Mm-hmm. But she was never afraid to confront people in positions of power when there was something at stake, right? When she thought it was important to do so. And that's a super, super important character trait that I loved about Kavanaugh.
Who was the bursary intended for?
So the bursary, and again, this was sort of talked about and decided amongst this small group of people, Kit and others, and really we were just chatting about it. We made a Facebook group and we were messaging each other. And the consensus emerged that the goal of the bursary was to prioritize first, for it to be a needs-based scholarship, mm-hmm. so not a merit-based scholarship. So if you're good enough to get into Mount Allison, you are meritorious, mm-hmm. and so this is a needs-based scholarship. So people who, for whatever reason, their socioeconomic position is such that they can make a case that they're having a hard time paying for university, basically. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is it's needs-based. Second thing is that it's for a black student. Mm-hmm. And so again, this is the person would self-identify, and this could be an African person, it could be someone from the Caribbean, it could be African American, it could be, I mean, there's all kinds of different ways to understand that, but a black student. Mm-hmm. And the third element of it is, and this, the third part is more, the first two are kind of, they need to be in place. The third one was agreed that if possible, but not always, it would go to someone who held some of the interests around social justice that Kavanaugh did. Mm-hmm. So someone who's when they were in high school, they were part of a club or whatever. For whatever reason, they have an interest and maybe even a track record of being involved in struggles for social justice, because that was a big part of Kavanaugh's life. That third one, though, I mean, we're asking, like, the third one is more of a, you know, if possible. Mm-hmm. And the first two are the kind of more hard criteria.
Sure, totally.
Yeah.
Are you still gathering donations for that bursary?
Yes, and I think we will for quite some time. I think I think we'll be gathering for months, actually.
Okay.
And keep going. I can't remember if there was a deadline where we were going to aim to stop. But what we really wanted to do was meet the goal of getting $25,000.
Okay.
And the reason for that was that if we could get to $25,000, then they can make it into a permanent endowed bursary.
Mm.
So if they can get it to $25,000, then they can keep the $25,000 in reinvest it and use the interest from that to dispense as the bursary every year in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. So that's the goal. Like, because they said, if you can get $25,000, it can be a permanent bursary. If we can't get $25,000, then we'll have to just take whatever money we have mm-hmm. and dispense it each year until it's gone, and then it's gone. Mm-hmm. Right. So the goal is to get to 25, and at that point, then we might. We could discuss if we get to that point whether we're going to keep going or what to do with it. As Kit was in contact about this, I felt really inspired to help out. And I think for me personally, it'll be the kind of thing that will go on for quite a long time. Like, it's the kind of thing that I would like to, even if we get, like, let's say we get to the 25,000 figure, it's the kind of thing I'd like to contribute to every year, like for quite a few years, mm-hmm. you know, and it can grow like far beyond, if we get to 25, it could grow far beyond that. Over the years, mm-hmm. And it's, yeah. So I'm really excited about it because I think it's something that she would have appreciated and been behind. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm also excited about it because it's a type of bursary or scholarship that we don't have a lot of here at Mount Allison, right? A needs based scholarship or bursary in this case. Specifically targeting Black students, mm-hmm. I think that was for me a really important part of this. So I think it's amazing, you know, because I think it does truly honor Kavana. It's something she would get behind, but also it's something that I think we can add, like that we can really add value to the university by having such a bursary.
Mount Allison says that the fundraising is still in early stages, and Thomas estimates that under $5,000 has been donated so far. Anyone is welcome to donate online by going to www.mta.ca/donate. Under Gift Details, select Other and insert Kavana Wakalele Bursary as the fund name. To finish off today's show, here are some voices of people who participated in the protest blockade along the Trans-Canada Highway in an effort to change Premier Rankin's mind about the new border regulations. To get in touch with CHMA about the new border regulations, or for any other reason, email news@chmafm.com.
I'm Christine Hicks.
I'm Emma Hicks.
Okay. And what brings you guys here today?
My family lives right there in Amherst. Her boyfriend is in Amherst. They go to school together all year.
He's working at the border right there. Yeah, so normally we're together, and then both times we've moved home, they've closed the border. So,
what did you make of that news today from coming out of Nova Scotia?
I think it was more that Higgs said and did exactly what he said he was going to do. He did it in the time frame that he said, and then a little bit sooner, just because of the vaccine situation. But then Rankin seems to put it out there and then take it away. It's like candy or carrot that somebody's trying to catch. But yeah.
Yeah, he seems like threatened by Higgs almost. I don't know, like he needs to prove that he's better than him for some reason, but this is doing the opposite.
We have family and friends in Amherst, Halifax, and we've made plans to meet at the beach in New Brunswick, and it's all up in the air now.
So what message would you like to send to either Higgs or Rankin if you would send a message to either of them?
Well, for once, I'd like to say thank you, Higgs. But no, Ian Rankin is being very immature, and I'm not impressed about it, and I'm half his age. So
yeah, same. I'd like to thank Higgs. I don't always agree with Higgs. I'm not going to get into the hospital thing, but I don't always agree with him, but for this border opening, it was good. With Rankin, I'd just like to say, like, come on.
Like, I'd also like to thank Elizabeth Smith McCrossin because she's fighting hard.
Yeah, I wish that our MLA was here, but I know it's Nova Scotia's fight, but at the same time, I'd like to thank Elizabeth Smith McCrossin as well.
I think our MLA might be on mat leave at the moment.
She is. Yeah.
Were you folks here at any previous protests in the spring?
No. We didn't feel it was necessary in the spring, but now it definitely is. Like, this has gotten to a point where there's so many people who have the vaccinations. We've done everything right. Nova Scotia's done everything right up to this point following their outbreak.
I also don't feel like it's anymore, it's not about COVID anymore. It's about political, it's political now. It's not about COVID anymore.
Yeah, so that's an interesting comment. You feel it's not really about COVID anymore. And yeah, I mean, do you have any idea what it is about?
It's two premiers that don't see eye to eye, and one's a little bit more immature than the other, and
they're giving us
the
time out.
Yeah,
I think they need to start having conversations together instead of punishing us. I saw earlier today that Rankin was asked if he even talked to the Premier of New Brunswick today about this, and he said no. So that makes no sense. They should be communicating, all four of them, New Brunswick, PEI, and Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, all of them. But it's just, again, immaturity on both their parts.
Can you tell me your name?
Paula Walton.
All right. And where are you from, Paula?
Midgick, New Brunswick.
Why are you here, standing on the edge of New Brunswick, just looking over this river here to Nova Scotia today?
Because I'm hoping to get my point across that we need our families. Family is everything. It's been way too long. Even if you're vaccinated, they don't even want you over there, so.
You were disappointed by today's news, I gather.
Yes, very.
What were your plans had this announcement not happened today?
I was going to go visit my mom tomorrow for the first time since November.
Where does she live?
Amherst, Nova Scotia.
About how far away?
10 minutes. She also has stage 4 emphysema, which means she's high risk. She's on oxygen, so I just miss her.
I get the sense, listening to the press conferences and different statements coming, that there's a bit of a blame game going on here. Are you angry at anyone in particular, or, you know, how are you processing that?
I'm not angry at anyone. I'm just ready for it to all end. It's just been going on for way too long. I've had enough.
Anything you want to say today?
Mom, if you're listening, I love you. I miss you. I'll get to you soon.
All right, thanks very much.
Thank you. I'm Emma Chase. I'm a Mount Allison student. I live in Sackville. I've lived in Sackville my whole life.
What brought you here today?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people were really excited about the New Brunswick and Nova Scotia opening up to each other, well, Nova Scotia opening up to us. And I came here to basically show my disappointment in such a late change in decision, basically less than 12 hours before everything was set to open. I think it's super unprofessional, and I think as youth in Sackville and in Atlantic Canada, that our leaders, our premiers, should be people that we can look up to. I can't even get an extension for an essay from a professor with 10 hours notice, you know, and this is such a big deal. So many people have been apart for so long. I think we're really not considering the mental health impact. Obviously, we need to be aware and stay safe and all that, but when other people are struggling, and is it really worth it?
What were your plans? Did you have plans to head into Nova Scotia if this announcement hadn't been made today?
I actually didn't have a reason to go to Nova Scotia. My friend was coming down to visit me, and she's just devastated. I'm really here, well, to support everybody else, but my boyfriend lives in PEI. I haven't seen him in almost 8 months. And so I think it's just like they're dangling a carrot. They're dangling our family, our loved ones. I can't count how many times that they've said that the Atlantic bubble's going to open just to pull it away. I've booked hotels. I've done all this before just to have to cancel everything. And it's really discouraging. And I think that this is exactly how you beat down people and divide people, by getting their hopes up just to absolutely rip everything away. And I think it's really unprofessional and disgusting, really.
Now, you said you have a loved one in PEI.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that I guess PEI has not changed its plan so far.
No. He's going to be able to come see me. He'll be able to come see me soon. But yeah, we've been apart for 8 months. And whenever they would say, like, oh, the Atlantic Bubble's opening. Oh my gosh, here are some giveaways to enter to rent hotel rooms and cabins and all this stuff. And we would do these things. And then just a few days before, oh, no, just kidding. Sorry. I lost a very close person to me this year. We both had, like, you know, personal struggles. And I think to not be able to have your partner with you, or to have these announcements to build up your excitement about going over, and then just have that ripped away when you're in, like, kind of a bad spot, I think it's not very empathetic. I don't think our premiers are really, like, if they came down here and listened to these people, I think they would maybe gain a little sympathy and empathy for all of us little people down here. Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of blame going back and forth about this. Do you have, I mean, are you directing your message at anyone in particular, or both premiers, or how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think it's at everybody. I think I'm not a typically angry person. I don't think that there's ever one person that's to blame. I think that this pandemic has actually become very politicized and caused a lot of division completely unnecessarily. And I think people need to realize that when we're divided, we can be more easily conquered. We need to come together. We need to stop hating on each other and tearing each other down, whether that's on social media, in person, whatever. And definitely our premiers need to step up to the plate and talk to each other and really communicate a little better. And I do place some blame in them, especially with this last minute decision. It's just I couldn't even believe it. I thought it was a joke like 10 hours before. So don't be too angry. Try to love each other, and don't hate each other. Don't let anybody divide you. Yeah.
Thanks very much, Emma.
Thank you.